From Vancouver, we present Episode 2 of The Kraken Wakes, a serial adapted by Eric Cameron from the novel by John Wyndham. The Kraken Wakes, Episode 2. Strange things have been happening around the world. First, there was the appearance of hundreds of mysterious fireballs, fuzzy red objects that shot across our skies and plunged into the deepest parts of the oceans. Some were destroyed by guided missiles, but no fragments were recovered because they exploded over the water. Then a Royal Navy ship was sent to the Caribbean for deep-sea exploration. Disaster struck just as the two-man crew of the bathyscope sighted a large oval shape circling the diving chamber 7,000 feet down. The steel cables were severed by unusual means, which experts compared to the intense heat of a cutting torch. Unmanned diving chambers were lost elsewhere in the same way. An American ship doing deep-sea research off the Philippines suddenly blew up when a strange kind of lightning completely enveloped the vessel. Months later, another ship on deep-sea explorations vanished without a trace near the Aleutians. Some British and American researchers have connected the losses of diving chambers and ships with the mysterious fireballs. For 3 years, the research teams have looked for clues and tried to develop theories. But what has happened was only a prelude to even more unusual and disturbing events. Mike and Phyllis Watson are commissioned by the English Broadcasting Company to prepare a documentary, but official sources are reticent about revealing all the government knows about the affair.
Get up, Mike.
Yes, eh?
Mike, wake up, darling. Here, look. Take a look at the front page of this newspaper.
What's happened?
Well, the Americans have lost the destroyer off the Philippines.
A destroyer?
That's the sixth ship in less than 3 months.
Six down. How many more to go, I wonder?
Turn to page 5. You'll find that the Americans lost their patience along with that destroyer.
They're going to use atomic bombs.
Do you suppose we might be able to get Captain Winters to do some wrangling?
No. Winters has a certain amount of influence, but the atomic bomb thing is an American show.
Well, it was a thought. You'd better shave now while I get breakfast. All the same, give Captain Winters a call, just in case he knows something.
Now for the wine. Do you have any preference, Mrs. Watson?
Oh, I know as much about wines, Mr. Mallaby, as I do about cars.
Oh, that reminds me, Phil.
Oh,
you know...
please, Mike, not in front of such illustrious company.
Illustrious? Mallaby and me? We're just a couple of hard-working journalists.
You're too modest, Mr. Bunnell.
Phyllis has been in a spin for the last couple of days at the prospect of dining with John Mallaby of the Tidings and Stuart Bunnell of the Sentinel.
You flatter us. Now, what do you say to Chateau Margaux? 1962.
Excellent.
John, you'd started to say something about it being necessary to postulate an intelligence responsible for the fireballs and such.
Yes, Stuart. It's been the reluctance to postulate an intelligence that's been the chief stumbling block. I'm no Bokker champion, but however we feel about his theory, Bokker does tie in more factors than anyone else.
Excuse the interruption, but the introduction of this Bokker element has me all at sea.
Oh, sorry. We took it for granted that the name of Alistair Bokker was not entirely unknown to you.
Oh, it's not unknown, being such an eminent geographer.
We didn't know that Dr. Bokker had come up with a theory to account for the fireballs and the sinkings.
It was presented to the Admiralty at least a year ago.
Captain Winters never so much as mentioned it.
Quite likely he never got to see it. Because Bokker is Bokker, the memorandum succeeded in getting itself read at some quite important levels. Well, that's as far as it went. Now, the gist of Dr. Bokker's argument was that the fused cables and electrification of certain ships must be regarded as indisputable evidence of intelligence at work in certain deeper parts of the oceans. He also insisted that because of the extreme conditions of the environment, no intelligent form of life could have evolved several thousand feet down. At the same time, Bocker said we must assume that no nation is capable of constructing mechanisms that could operate at such depths in so many places.
So whatever it is, it must have evolved somewhere else.
Yes. Let's say on a large planet where the pressures were normally very high. He selected Jupiter as being most likely to fulfill the conditions of pressure.
Imagine the splash that would have made in the pages of the Tidings and the Sentinel.
That's just what I thought. You see, when Bocker got nowhere with their lordships at the Admiralty, he withdrew his memorandum and presented it for the personal consideration of William Harding, my managing editor. Harding tactfully returned it with a polite note.
The editor of the Sentinel did the same. Much too sensational.
I wonder why the Daily Tape or the Lens hasn't printed it. Well, isn't it just their stuff? Oh, what about the American tabloids?
The Tape very nearly did publish it. Only Dr. Bocker said he'd sue them if they mentioned his name. He's after reputable publication or none at all.
One small American paper did use a chewed-up version, but as this was their third interplanetary invasion story in 4 months, it made no impact.
Well, whatever the top naval men may think about Dr. Bocker, it seems clear enough that they must have been assuming for some time that there is something intelligent down in the depths.
Why do you say that, Mike?
Because you don't build a special underwater atomic bomb in a few days.
But is it really too late for some such friendly approach as Dr. Bocker wanted, I mean?
Mm.
Well, there's only been one bomb exploded. If there isn't another, the things down there might think it was a natural disaster, a volcanic eruption or something.
It won't be just one bomb. And it was always too late, my dear. Can you imagine us tolerating any form of rival intelligence on Earth, no matter how it got here? Why, we can't even tolerate anything but the narrowest differences of views within our own race.
I'd like to interview Alastair Bocker one day. He could fill in a good many pieces of the puzzle.
You know, Mike, things sort of die on us. When all that excitement about the fireballs boiled up, it looked as if we were right at the middle of the story of the century. Now that's all fizzled out. Everything's gone quiet again.
If you'd read the papers properly, you'd see that two more atomic bombs were sent down in the last week. One in the Cocos Keeling Basin, the other in the Prince Edward Island Deep.
I didn't see that.
News value, practically nil at the moment. You have to read the small print.
It does show that they've not shelved the whole thing. The Navy, I mean.
Apparently not.
Oh, is that why you arranged the luncheon date for me with Captain Winters? I'm to play the Mata Hari game, am I?
Yep, only up to a point, mind you.
Dear, the way I have to work. One day you'll find it's misfired and you've cut yourself out.
Darling, you know you thoroughly enjoy yourself.
Well, the captain's a very attractive man. It was such a lovely little out-of-the-way place. The Dover sole was marvelous, and their cheeses are scrumptious.
What did Captain Winters have to say?
Oh, lots of nice things.
But passing from the really important to matters of more worldwide interest.
Well, the general flap seems to have worried the authorities. It's unsettled people. The brass is uneasy that what is just an excitement now might suddenly turn into a large-scale panic.
Have their investigations made any more progress?
Captain Winters didn't actually say they hadn't, but what he said implied it.
Hmm. What about the atomic bombs?
He says they're out. Well, for the moment, at any rate.
Why?
Well, you can only use them in isolated places. And even then, the radioactivity spreads widely. They kill an awful lot of fish and make a lot more radioactive. Fisheries experts on both sides of the Atlantic have been complaining.
Everything you said we already knew, more or less.
Well, here's something that you didn't know. Two of those special atomic bombs haven't gone off.
Oh?
And it has them very worried. Well, you see, the way they're set to operate is by the pressure at a given depth. Simple and pretty accurate. There's also a secondary setting on the bombs, quite independent of the pressure switch. It's a precaution just in case the bomb happens to land on a submarine, mountain or something. Well, it works with a time switch. Only with these two bombs, it hasn't worked.
Perfectly simple, my dear Watson. The water got in and stopped the clock.
There's nothing simple about it, Mike. and it's made them extremely anxious. Three cable repair ships have unaccountably disappeared.
Any survivors?
No. Now they're developing some kind of guided depth missile, which will be high explosive, but not atomic. She hasn't been tested yet. Oh, incidentally, Captain Winters promised me an introduction to Dr. Louis Matte, the oceanographer.
But the Oceanographical Society has more or less threatened to excommunicate anybody who deals with us after that last script. It's part of their anti-Bocker line.
This Dr. Matte happens to be a friend of the captain's. He's seen the fireball incidence maps, and he's a half-convert.
When can we see him?
I hope to see him in a few days' time.
But don't you think I should...
But it's sweet of you not to trust me still.
But still...
No. Now it's time we went to work on the dishes.
I still think it would be a good idea if I were to go along when you see him.
What a lovely garden, Dr. Matte. It must be inspiring to work in such attractive surroundings.
Well, we located this branch of the Institute here because of the many highly sensitive instruments we have. To be well away, that is, from vibrations caused by traffic, jet aircraft, and so on.
Oh, these are gorgeous roses.
Oh, you must take some home with you, Mrs. Watts.
No, I wouldn't dream of it.
Oh, I insist.
Do you mind if we sit on this bench in the sun?
By all means. I love the sun.
So do I. Well, now, to get back to our topic.
Before I comment any further, I must make it quite clear to you that any material I might supply must remain strictly anonymous in origin. Agreed?
Of course. Now, would you repeat what you had started to say about reports of discolorations in certain ocean currents?
Oh, yes, the discolorations. Well, the first observation was made a year ago in the Kurosawa Current in the North Pacific.
What kind of discolorations?
An unusual muddiness flowing northeast. Samples were taken and sent for examination. And what do you think the discoloration turned out to be?
I wouldn't even attempt to guess.
Mainly radiolarian ooze, but an appreciable percentage of diatomaceous ooze.
Obviously, Dr. Matte, something not only was, but still is going on down there.
Something definitely is. But to be honest with you, Lord knows what it is. What's more, the same thing is happening in other areas of the oceans.
Do you think it's serious? I mean, is it something that worries you?
Well, it doesn't keep me awake at night, if that's what you mean. Our worry is that we don't like having to admit that we are baffled in our own, bailiwick. As for its effect, well, I think that might be beneficial.
In what way?
There's a great deal of nutritious ooze lying wasted on the sea bottom. The more of it that comes up, the more the plankton will thrive. And the more the plankton thrives, the more the fish will thrive. Consequently, the price of fish ought to go down, which would be very nice for those who like fish, of which I am not one. What troubles me is that I feel I ought to be able to answer a simple why on the matter. After all, I'm supposed to have been an expert for a number of years now.
My head was spinning. Well, all in all, Mike, too much geography and too much bathyography and too much of all theographies. And lucky to escape ichthyology. Dr. Matte doesn't like fish. Well, I'd like to see anybody make a script out of that lot of notes. Well, there's no about it. Some kind of ographer might give a talk on it to highbrows, but even if he was intelligible, where would it get anybody?
Dr. Matte didn't suggest how this sediment bit might link in with the fireballs and the rest.
No, he admitted he doesn't know. But he isn't going to make any guesses that might send his reputation the way Dr. Bocker's has gone.
Bocker must have some views on this, and it might be worth trying to find out what they are. That select press conference of his that we went to was almost an introduction.
Well, he went very coy after that. Well, not surprising, really. Still, we weren't among the ones who panned him publicly.
Toss you. Which of us rings him up?
I'll do it. The fact that I've just interviewed Dr. Mattei might make it a bit easier to persuade him. As I explained when I telephoned you, Dr. Bocker, what we're trying to do is to fit a lot of bits and pieces into a puzzle.
Yeah.
Well, if you can show us where one of them should go, we'd be very grateful.
Well, you both know my theory of the origin of this deep water intelligence, so we'll not go into that now. We'll deal with the present state of affairs, and I deduce it to be this. Having settled into the environment best suited to them, these creatures' next thought would be to develop that environment in accordance with their ideas of what constitutes a convenient, orderly, and eventually civilized condition.
May I ask how you arrived at that conclusion?
You see, because they are pioneers, colonists.
Ah.
Once they have safely arrived, they set about improving and exploiting their new territory. What we've been seeing are the results of their having started work on the job.
What sort of work, Doctor?
Well, how can we possibly tell? But judging by the reception they received from us, guided missiles and atomic bombs, one would imagine that their first concern would be to provide themselves with some form of defense. For this, they would require metals. I suggest, therefore, that somewhere down in the Mindanao Deep, and also somewhere in the deep in the southeast of the Cocos Keeling Basin, you would find mining operations now in progress. I know of nothing, and can imagine nothing, that could produce the effect we've observed, except some exceedingly powerful machine for continuous ejection of debris.
What about the other places?
Well, I suspect from their locations that they may have another purpose.
Which is?
Communications, I think. So, on this map, you can see the Romance Trench in the Equatorial Atlantic.
Yes?
It's a gorge through the submerged mountains of the Atlantic Ridge.
Uh-huh.
Now, when one considers the fact that this trench forms the only deep link between the eastern and western Atlantic basins, it seems more than just a coincidence that signs of activity should show up there. And the activity strongly suggests to me that something down below is not satisfied with the natural state of the Romance Trench. If there were prospects of using it, it would be an advantage to clear the trench of ooze deposits down to a solid bottom. Now, does it not strike you that for a creature of the depths, a tunnel connecting the deeps on either side of the isthmus would offer advantages almost identical with those that we obtained from the existence of the Panama Canal?
Those are fascinating theories, Dr. Bocker.
You've given us plenty of food for thought.
Yes, but not indigestible, I hope. Since you're following this along, you've probably heard of two atomic bombs that failed to go off.
Yes, we have.
Have you heard that there was an unsponsored atomic explosion yesterday?
Was it one of them?
Well, I'd hate to think it could be any other atomic bomb. But the odd thing is that though one bomb was lost off the Aleutians and the other in the Mindanao Deep, yesterday's explosion took place off Guam.
But that's miles away.
Yes, a good 1,200 miles away.
It's incredible.
You see, I'm not the alarmist type, and I wouldn't want to feel that I was contributing to the current uneasiness in official circles. However, I'm perturbed by a certain ominousness in the speed with which our unidentified visitors took up the defensive. As if they might have expected something of the kind and prepared for it.
Then what would you propose as the next stage?
What really remains to be seen is whether the natural obstacles that now separate us will defeat their abilities, as they almost defeat ours. And if they do not, then how can we meet them when they come?
You really believe we might have to fight them?
Given two intelligent species with differing requirements on one planet, it's inevitable that sooner or later one will exterminate the other.
That has a very grim Darwinian sound.
Hmm? Yeah?
You said inevitable. Do you really think that?
Well, we can't both inherit the Earth.
Have you developed any theories on how we can defend our civilization?
No. No, I expect that the weapons to be chosen will be dictated largely by the time, place, and nature of the need. And if I seem pessimistic, it's because my belief in the essential good nature of my fellow men.
I shall be ever respectful to the memory of your late Aunt Harriet.
Mm.
Without that little legacy, we could never have afforded the cottage.
Mm. A place in Cornwall has always been a dream of mine. Now, whenever we get enough assignments lined up, we can nip down here and write and take long walks along the shore.
And drink rough cider in the smuggler's roost.
Well, I think you had rather a lot last night.
Oh.
I'm surprised your head doesn't hurt.
Well, this sea breeze clears away the cobwebs.
Oh, did you bring along the newspaper with the story about the Japanese ship?
I slipped the front page into my pocket.
Well, at least there were survivors. They might find out something.
Only 5 from more than 700 on board.
Mike? You see this little map of the area where the Yatoshiro went down?
Yes.
The spot marked X?
Mm-hmm.
Well, doesn't that put the scene of this sinking near the Mindanao Trench?
It can't be far off.
Fair weather, no collision, no explosions.
How the devil does a 19,000-ton ship suddenly sink like a steel coffin?
Someone has suggested metal fatigue as the possible cause. Do you think this can be it, Mike? So soon?
It's difficult to tell. So much of this newspaper story is dramatized. If it actually sank in only a minute... No, I suspend judgment, Phil. We'll see what tomorrow's Times has to say.
When I sit here by the sea, the rest of the world seems a million miles away. And there are times when I find myself wishing that...
It's the right place. I was just telling Harold it couldn't be because Phyllis did say it was called Rose Cottage. And, well, where are the roses, Mike?
I'm sorry, Tunie. We shall really have to grow some. Well, let's go in. Phil has the kettle on. If the weather holds, we should be able to manage a little bit of a walk.
Oh, do have some more ham, Harold.
I won't say no, Phil. It's excellent.
Mm, good.
By the way, how is the metal fatigue theory going down with your engineering firm?
No, it's not pleasing our people.
I didn't think it would. Help yourself to the salad.
Thank you.
Metal fatigue? Oh, you don't mean to say that people here really believe all that stuff about metal fatigue causing that Japanese liner to break up and sink?
Well, why not, Tunie? There's nothing very new about the idea of metal fatigue.
And it's practically official now.
Oh, Mike, surely you don't believe official statements anymore? Of course they had to make some kind of statement, or else do something about it. Well, it's pretty much like Munich and so many other flimflams.
Oh, come, Tunie, I'd not go so far as that.
Well, near enough. If they can do it once and have the whole thing explained away for them, they'll just be encouraged to do it again and go on doing it. We ought to have called their bluff months ago.
Whose bluff?
Oh, you know what I mean, Mike. All this story about things in the sea and those fireball things and all that silly stuff about Martians and so on.
I don't recall anything about Martians.
Well, Neptunians, it's the same sort of thing. Or the rubbish that Dr. Bocker put about. I can't think why he wasn't arrested long ago.
Nowadays, we don't arrest people for suggesting scientific theories.
Well, I happen to know from somebody who used to know him that Bocker joined the Communist Party when he first went up to the university. And, of course, he's been working for them ever since.
Oh, Tunie.
Well, he didn't invent it. I don't mean that. No, the whole thing was thought up in Moscow. And they just used him to put it across because he was influential. And he did it very well. That story about the things in the sea was all over the world, and a lot of people believed in it for a bit. But, of course, Barker is done for now. Of course, that doesn't matter to them. They do that to people. He was just wanted to lay a foundation, you see.
Are you saying the whole thing has been engineered by the Russians right from the beginning?
Well, of course. Quite a long time ago now, they had their first try with the flying saucers. But that didn't come off because most people didn't believe in them.
Oh.
So this time they improved it. First, they sent out the red balloon things to puzzle people. Then there was all this business about things down on the sea bottom that Dr. Bocker helped to spread. And to make that more convincing, they cut some cables and even sank a few ships.
What with?
Well, with these new midget submarines of theirs, the same kind that they used on this Japanese ship. And now they'll just be able to go on sinking ships, because once people have seen through this metal fatigue business, they'll just say it's being done by the what's-its in the sea. And as long as people believe that, there'll be no popular backing for reprisals against the Russians.
So the metal fatigue idea was just to keep people quiet.
Exactly, Phyllis. The government doesn't dare admit that it's the Russians, because then there would be a demand that they should take action. And they can't afford to do that with all the red influence there is in the world today. But if they officially pretend to think it's these Bokker things, well, then they'd have to pretend that they were doing something about that as well. And that would make them look pretty silly later on when it's all exploded.
One of these days, I'm likely to discover that my wife's employed by the Secret Service.
Oh, Harold, as a public relations man, it should be easy for you to see that what I am saying is simply down-to-earth logic.
And this is the government's way out of a sticky dilemma.
Obviously. And as it's only a Japanese ship that's been sunk, it's all right for the moment. But it won't last long. We can't afford to have the Russians getting away with this kind of thing.
I think Tunney lays it on a bit thick. But I can see a busy time ahead for me. Months of writing stuff to prove that none of our products can possibly suffer from metal fatigue.
What's it matter, Harold? They'll have to use your products.
Oh, I know that, but all our competitors will be saying how their goods aren't affected by it. So it'll look bad if we don't do the same. Also, you noticed the shipping shares?
Yes, sinking lower every day.
That isn't good, Mike. It points to a number of people who aren't satisfied with the metal fatigue or the Russians as explanations.
Well, are you?
Oh, of course not. But that isn't the point. I'm not the kind of fellow who can make a difference to the price of shipping shares. The ones who can are influential. If they start a scare, people start canceling orders and trade bogs down. Oh, it doesn't matter a hoot whether there are things at the bottom of the sea or not. What does matter is that if people swing back to thinking there are, if they do, we'll have one hell of a trade recession.
Well, if you do happen to have any money in shipping, Harold, I should take it out and put it into aircraft shares.
I know you and Phil have been specializing in this thing and following it along. Have you any solution?
No, I'm afraid we don't.
Oh,
we're just in time to catch the news broadcast.
I'll turn it on.
In a very brief statement issued by the Home Secretary that the ship had been lost at sea about 3 hours ago. No details are available as yet, but it is feared that the list of the missing may prove to be very heavy. A modern vessel of 90,000 tons, the Queen Anne was the current holder of the transatlantic record. Several ships are racing to the spot where the sinking occurred in the hope of picking up survivors.
I'm sorry. I couldn't take any more.
Oh, that lovely ship. And you think Martians did that?
From Vancouver, you have heard episode 2 of The Kraken Wakes, a serial adapted by Eric Cameron from the novel by John Wyndham. The following actors were featured in this episode: Sam Payne, Shirley Broderick, Jack Ammon, John White, Otto Loy, Roy Brinson, Roland Hunter, Daphne Goldrick, and Greg Barnes. Sound effects, Lars Eastholm. The play was directed by Norman Newton in the Vancouver studios of the CBC, with technical operation by Ian Stevens.